Mixing the cloud. Okay, that's somebody in, I think. We are recording. No, nobody's in. Weird. What? People are trying to come in, I think. Do I have it blocked? All right. Well, I'm going to go live and I'll try to let people in as they come if I see them. Okay, Ryan?
Yeah, that sounds like a plan to me.
Okay, awesome. As soon as we go live, I'll introduce you.
Okay, perfect.
Great. Just thinking here.
Says live on my end.
Okay, and we are live. Hello, everyone. Today is Tuesday, September 15th, 2020. I am Jennifer Woodward here today with Ryan Monahan. I'm so happy that we're back for another Quick and Nerdy. Our topic today is more methylation. So we don't know if you're, you know, a methylation novice or a methylation master, but I'm sure you'll pick up some pearls today from Ryan, who has been traveling with Lindy, his partner, the last couple weeks. Ryan, we were just talking about how you guys got away to Utah and you made a great trip of some of the national parks there, Arches and Canyonlands. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that? It sounded amazing.
It was incredible. It was also incredibly hot. It was about 103 degrees one day. So that was interesting, but it was good. And yeah, it was just amazing. It was so beautiful. I got to leave my computer behind for a few days and just spend some time in the national parks in Utah. And it's quite an alien landscape. It feels like you're on the planet Mars or something. There are just these towering, as the name implies, at Arches National Park, there are these towering arches that are kind of red and rust colored. And Canyonlands has all of these vast, wide open canyons, like as grand as the Grand Canyon. You wouldn't even believe it. It's like their own version of the Grand Canyon in Utah. So that was pretty cool. We also got to spend some time in Gunnison, Colorado, which we hadn't been to before, but we did some paddle boarding at the Blue Mesa Reservoir in Gunnison. So got to do a lot of fun outdoor stuff. It was really fun.
Super fun. Good for you guys. I love it when FDNs practice what they preach and get that R part of the dress protocol down. So good job, Ryan.
You got to do it. We've got to practice what we preach. We can't just be in front of our here's all the time.
so true. All right, you guys. Well, we do have more methylation for you today. I will just tell you, I'm not on camera today because I took a supplement that made my face break out in hives, and Ryan said he would go dark with me in solidarity. So I appreciate that, Ryan. We'll be back next time, hopefully without my supplement hives.
Hopefully you don't take that supplement anymore, I guess.
I'm not.
Okay. Yeah.
Sorry. So yeah, Ryan, take it away. Let's give us a reprimer on methylation. I know you've got some great stuff planned for us today.
Yeah, sure. So 2 weeks ago, we went over some methylation basics just as a primer, and this will be an extension of that. So for everyone tuning in, if you haven't checked out that primer, I would recommend going back and watching that one first as a little bit of a review. It's only about 20 minutes or so. It's a really short video. Mm-hmm. So we're going to continue on from where we left off. And as a very, very quick recap, just to provide a definition here of methylation, it's actually a lot simpler than it sounds. The methylation processes in our body, it's literally just the process of making methyl groups. That's all it really is. And these are what methyl groups look like. They are a carbon atom attached to three hydrogen, and that's what a methyl group is. And our body transfers around these methyl groups billions or trillions of times every second to help our body to, basically to help us with hundreds of, I think it's a 500 different metabolic processes in the body that are dependent on these methyl groups. So it's one of the most important processes in the body, and that's why this topic, we're going to see how it relates to, potential consequences in terms of health issues and also how we can optimize our health so that we are methylating properly. So just a few kind of neat little methylation quick facts here. So methylation happens in every cell of the body. So it's a global process. But 80% of methylation happens in the liver. So the reason that's significant is because it really emphasizes detoxification, right? So if our liver is all clogged up with bugs that are spilling over from the gut and, you know, other forms of toxins, whether that's from plastics or heavy metals or mold toxins, you know, that can kind of clog up the liver and impair our detoxification processes, and therefore methylation won't be working very well. So the fact that most methylation happens in the liver really emphasizes the importance of liver health. Now, in terms of the methyl groups that are made by the methylation cycle, 75% of all these methyl groups actually go towards making two really important nutrients in the body. One is phosphatidylcholine, which is kind of a mouthful, but it's actually a form of methylated choline, right? This is actually a pretty big and really important point. I was actually thinking we might even do a whole nother quick and nerdy just about how the role of methylation in making phosphatidylcholine, that's how important it is.
It sounds perfectly nerdy. I'll put it on the docket.
Awesome. Yeah. Very cool. So 75% of all of our methyl groups go towards making phosphatidylcholine and creatine, right? So phosphatidylcholine is important for making our cell membranes. It makes up 50% of our cell membranes are made of phosphatidylcholine. Right? So we don't have enough choline. We can't make cell membranes. And that's a problem because then our cells aren't going to be, you know, processing nutrients and hormones and keeping toxins out of the cell. So it's super important to keep the health and integrity of our cell membranes with having plenty of choline in our body.
Ryan, I know that we get choline from like egg yolk, and that you can add it in through like sunflower lecithin, correct?
Both correct. Yep. Yeah. So the primary sources of choline are going to be eggs, liver, and other organ meats are very, very high in choline. And also, yeah, any kind of form of lecithin. Mm-hmm. So that would also include like sunflower lecithin, for example. That you might find like in supplements. You can take a phosphatidylcholine supplement as well, which is largely derived from sunflower lecithin.
Okay.
Yep. So there are other sources in the diet, mm-hmm. but those are going to be the top three. Mm-hmm. Yep. Eggs, organ meats, and lecithin. So this is kind of a quick little review, some of this here, but methylation is required for turning off genes that promote dysfunction and turning on genes that promote well-being. It is required to make neurotransmitters like serotonin and dopamine, which help to regulate our mood and concentration and all that kind of good brain function stuff. This is interesting. Methylation helps our body convert serotonin into melatonin. So we actually need to be methylating properly to make melatonin. We need methyl groups to activate other genes in the body. That's one of the reasons why methylation is so important. Because if we're not methylating, a lot of other genes that are kind of downstream from our methylation genes will start to not be functioning as well. Hmm. And we also need methyl groups to break down certain things that build up in the body. So we need methyl groups to break down dopamine, our catecholamines, which are our fight or flight neurotransmitters like adrenaline, to break down histamine, to break down estrogen, and even arsenic, which is a heavy metal. So if we're not methylating, we can end up with, you know, too much fight or flight neurochemistry. We can end up with excess histamine issues and histamine intolerance. You can end up with symptoms of estrogen dominance if we're not breaking these things down properly.
Arsenic's kind of a random one to throw in there. Does it pertain to other heavy metals as well?
You know, I've wondered the same thing. I because everything I've come across says that methyl groups specifically help to break down arsenic.
Okay. I'm not sure
why it wouldn't be the case for, say, like mercury or aluminum. Mm-hmm. But it could be just something specific about the way that arsenic is metabolized that requires methyl groups, where maybe other heavy metals maybe are more conjugated through methylation or glucuronidation or other processes. Not 100% sure though.
Okay, interesting. I think that's interesting, and I'll just tell you, so does Anouk. She commented on the Facebook group.
Oh yeah, super interesting. Yep. Yeah, so yeah, those are just some quick facts on methylation, which kind of brings us to the star of the show, which is everyone's favorite methylation gene, MTHFR. We'll dig a little bit into MTHFR, but first I just want to show you guys, again, a little snapshot of the methylation cycle so that you can see here that the MTHFR gene is actually just one little piece or snippet of this methylation cycle, right? So I will just kind of add a caveat here that there's a lot more going on other than MTHFR. And there's a lot of other nutrients and processes that need to be working in order to be methylating properly, other than just this gene.
And Ryan, you said this is from Dr. Kara Fitzgerald's book, is that correct?
Yeah, this is from, you can get this ebook on Dr. Kara Fitzgerald's website.
Yeah, I linked that this morning, guys, just in case you're wondering where to find it.
It is a great, I've read it twice. I am quirky and I am nerdy. And
that's fantastic. It's on my docket. I actually have it up right now in my browser.
Really?
I'll be getting it this week.
And what I love about her ebook too is she basically says throughout the ebook several times, like, look, guys, if you have an MTHFR genetic issue, that doesn't mean you have to go swallowing down methylated folate and methylated B12 supplements. Mm-hmm. And she's actually much more of a fan of optimizing methylation through diet and lifestyle. So we're going to talk about that too today.
Great.
Mm-hmm. All right. So back to MTHFR. So what is this thing, right? So it's a gene. Okay. And all genes, what they do is they provide instructions for making enzymes. So that's a really key point, that all genes make enzymes. So the MTHFR gene happens to code for or provide instructions for making this enzyme called methylene tetrahydrofolate reductase, which is quite a mouthful.
Nice.
Don't necessarily need to memorize that, but that's what MTHFR does stand for. All genes make enzymes. I'm hearing myself back. Oh, kind of went away. Okay. The show will go on. So notice that it ends with the word reductase, and anything that ends in ace is an enzyme, right? So every single gene, you know, whether it's COMT, MTHFR, MAO, right? There's a bunch of different genes that we can look at, but they will always end in an enzyme or ACE. So the role of this enzyme is to help our body make a methylated form of folate called 5-MTHF. That's what it actually does. So that special form of methylated folate then gets used to help convert homocysteine into methionine, right? So it donates the methyl group from this 5-MTHF, which then adds that methyl group to homocysteine and then turns it into methionine. And methionine is actually just methyl homocysteine, by the way. So this methylated homocysteine gets you methionine.
So question, Ryan, homocysteine we know is a marker for not great things in the body, and methionine is helpful for like liver detoxification, right? So it's turning something that's not great for the body into something that is great for the body. Is that true?
In a sense. So homocysteine is also essential for helping make glutathione. It's the precursor for glutathione. So if it builds up, yes, it can be harmful and become a problem. Okay. So actually, I'm glad you asked that, because that's a really good segue into looking at this process here visually, because it's a little bit hard to internalize when you're just kind of reading it out. But let me kind of describe here what I've just read out loud. So here again is that MTHFR gene, and it takes this folate form here, this methylene tetrahydrofolate, and it converts it into 5-MTHF, right? Then that methyl group gets handed off right here to convert homocysteine into methionine. So To your point and how it's related to the question about homocysteine, is that, let me kind of see if I can draw on this here. This is actually super helpful, guys, because homocysteine is often used as a functional marker for methylation status, right? So let's say that the MTHFR gene is not working very well, right? Let's just kind of cross that out. Or we're not getting enough folate in the diet. So what happens is this traffic circle here, traffic is moving this way, and then there's a roadblock, right? So what happens then is that the methyl group from this form of methylated folate, it doesn't get donated to homocysteine, right? So homocysteine then therefore does not get converted into methionine, right? Again, because if there's a traffic block here, and because these two traffic circles are adjacent, that means that homocysteine is not going to get the methyl group it needs to become methionine, right? So homocysteine is blocked.
It's like a handoff there. Is that what's happening?
It is like a handoff. Yeah, think of like a football pass.
Okay.
So the quarterback here, I don't know anything about football. the quarterback, he hands off this methyl group from 5-methyltetrahydrofolate to homocysteine. And then when that methyl group gets added to homocysteine, it becomes methylated homocysteine, which is what methionine is, right? But if there's not enough folate in the system, or if MTHFR is not working, then that handoff doesn't happen, and homocysteine does not get converted. So what happens here is homocysteine starts to build up. And if you were to measure homocysteine on your blood chemistry, like you can order homocysteine as a part of routine blood chemistry, like through DHA, for example, it's like a $60 or $80 blood chemistry marker. And if it's elevated, say above around, I think it's above 7.5 or 8, that is a strong indication that either A, you may have an MTHFR genetic mutation, or not enough either, you know, methylated folate or methyl B12 in the body, those methylated B vitamins. Is this making sense?
I think it is. It's a great, great visual and great explanation.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and that's why homocysteine is probably the most commonly used marker to determine methylation status, right? So an elevation can be problematic, like you alluded to. Homocysteine does present a risk for cardiovascular issues like heart attack or cardiovascular disease or heart disease, right? And of course, you know, there's more that can go into it than just a single marker, but it is traditionally used as a kind of a heart marker to look at cardiovascular health. So there is a long-term risk here. If you do have one or two copies of an MTHFR mutation, it does present a risk factor for developing those heart issues or cardiovascular issues. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. But the good news is that a lot of this stuff is really easy to work around and circumvent. Right. So let me clear out my doodles. All right. Cool. So hopefully that makes sense, guys. I know it's a little more on the technical side, but again, let's simplify this here and just say that, you know, MTHFR, it helps our body make a special form of methylated folate that helps convert homocysteine into methionine. And then the next step is that methionine then gets converted to SAMe, which is our body's primary methyl donor. So more simply stated, to summarize this, the MTHFR gene ultimately helps our body make more SAMe or methyl groups, right? Mm-hmm. So MTHFR is a really critical step in the methylation cycle to ultimately make these guys. Not too bad, right? All right, so MTHFR mutations, here's the thing. They're very, very common. An MTHFR mutation, what it essentially means, kind of taking a step back here, but when you have a mutation or a, some people call it a defect. It's not a defect. It's just that your gene, behaves differently than the rest of the population, right? If you have a copy of this mutation, it means that the gene function is slowed down, and it may produce less of the MTHFR enzyme. So if you're not producing enough of that enzyme, you're not going to make a lot of this this special methylated folate here, this 5-MTHF.
And the mutation happens on the genetic level, but the expression happens on the epigenetic level with maybe the liver function being slowed down like you're talking about. Is that right?
Yeah, correct. So the mutation, right, is actually a variation in the gene itself.
Right.
When that happens, the gene is not going to, may not be able to produce as much MTHFR enzyme as someone who didn't have that genetic issue. So a downstream consequence of that is everything here that we mentioned earlier can be impaired, like not being able to make enough phosphatidylcholine, or not being able to make enough creatine, not being able to epigenetically express other genes in the body, like turn off genes that promote dysfunction. You may not be able to make enough serotonin or dopamine or melatonin. You may not be able to break down dopamine, histamine, or estrogen as well.
So interesting. Hey, Ryan, Anouk does have a question. Can someone be taking methyl B and still have high homocysteine leading to MTHFR issues or indicative of?
Yes, because, and this is actually a helpful little clinical piece of information, that if you're taking methylated B vitamins and you're still not feeling any better, there's probably a sign of deeper dysfunction like toxins in the body or infections. Hmm. So other things other than B vitamin deficiencies can impair methylation processes. And ultimately, we're going to get to this in just a moment. The best prescription for methylation issues is DRESS, right? Okay. You have to clean up the whole system. You can't just plug the hole with methyl B12 or methyl folate and expect it to fix all your health issues. It doesn't work like that. Yep. Yeah, we'll get more into that in just a minute. Mm-hmm. So up to 50% of the population has at least one copy of the MTHFR mutation, up to 50%. You know, it really, in part, it depends on your ethnicity. But up to 50% of the population has at least one copy of the mutation. So what that means is, well, you know, think about how many people find out they have MTHFR and they think they're a mutant, and they think their body's broken and that they need to treat the gene as though it's some kind of disease, right? But if 50% of the population has an MTHFR mutation, then wouldn't half the population be, you know, falling apart at the seams? So having an MTHFR gene mutation, and I probably should have put this up here, but it does not guarantee that you will have any negative symptoms. And we'll further describe, you know, other things that can affect methylation, but it's definitely nothing to lose sleep over, is the good news.
Very encouraging as a clinician to be able to give your client that peace of mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely, you know, something like when I initially found out, and I wasn't as educated on the topic, when I first found out I had two copies of the MTHFR mutation, I did, like many people, you know, jump to the conclusion that I needed to take, you know, methylated B vitamins for the rest of my life. And that, you know, my body was like defective or something. Right.
Right.
So just some terminology here. If you have one copy of the mutation, that means you are heterozygous. And that means you inherited one copy of that gene in, variation, either from your mother or from your father. If you are homozygous, that means you inherited that genetic mutation from both your mother and your father, and you have two copies. So I have this backwards here. Let me fix this. If you have one copy, it can represent roughly up to a 40% reduction in the gene function of the MTHFR gene. Notice I said up to. I didn't say it does represent much reduction in function, because it just depends on so many variables. It depends so much on your diet and lifestyle. And if you are homozygous, you have two copies, it can represent up to a 70% reduction in the gene's ability to function. So what we're going to learn here in a minute is that just because you have the MTHFR gene doesn't guarantee that things are breaking down or that you're going to have these negative health consequences. But it does mean you need to be more mindful of certain habits, certain diet and lifestyle habits. The MTHFR gene, because, and this is why I started talking about general methylation principles and just how global the process of methylation is, right? So remember, it happens in every cell in the body. So this is a really, really tiny short list of potential health consequences. If you really do some research, you could potentially find that MTHFR has been associated with just about any health issue, right? Mm-hmm. And again, that's because it affects liver function, it affects genetic expression, it happens in every cell in the body, and so on, right? But these are some more common potential health consequences that can occur if you're not taking care of your methylation cycle. And you're not, and if you have an MTHFR genetic variant, if you're not taking care of it. Right. So we talked about elevated homocysteine being a risk factor for developing cardiovascular diseases. It will often be above an 8 on a blood chemistry test if your methylation cycle is kind of breaking down. Chronic fatigue, neurological issues like depression, anxiety, but also Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, so like neurodegenerative issues, chemical sensitivities, poor detoxification. Undermethylating tends to lead towards low glutathione. So low levels of glutathione could be another clue for a methylation issue. All kinds of autoimmune conditions can be implicated in undermethylating, migraines, autism, different kinds of cancers, including gastric cancer, schizophrenia, and in women and females, there are pregnancy risks for neural tube defects and even miscarriages. Mm-hmm. So that leads us to what to do about it, right? I highlighted this quote because I loved it so much, because it's so much in alignment with FDN principles. Dr. Ben Lynch says, repairing the digestive system and optimizing the flora should be one of the first steps in correcting methylation deficiency. So if you jump to taking methylated B vitamins before healing the gut, it may not get you very far. Mm-hmm. So that is why that DRESS is the ultimate prescription for MTHFR issues or methylation defects.
Brian, you can't say prescription.
Well, I put it in quotes.
I know, I'm just kidding. I'm messing with you, Ryan.
I was like, if I put it in quotes, I can get away.
Yeah.
Ultimate, what's another protocol? So having an MTHFR mutation, again, it doesn't guarantee you'll have any negative symptoms because here's why. Exercise has been studied to increase methylation processes in your body. There's actually been research done on this. They did this study where they had participants only exercise one leg and to keep the other one at rest. And in the leg that was being exercised had far more production of methyl groups.
That is fascinating.
Crazy.
Will you post that in this thread? That is very cool.
I'll post a link to the study. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Folic acid is a, I should add this here, is a synthetic form of a folate that your body does not process very well. It can actually block your folate receptors and make it harder for your body to use the natural forms of folate, like methylfolate. So this is something that Dr. Ben Lynch is been a huge proponent of for as long as I can remember, of telling people to throw their folic acid in the trash can.
I wonder why anyone even produces folic acid anymore.
I don't know. There is still, if you do a Google search on it, you will find conventional practitioners saying that this information is false and that folic acid is totally fine for your body. and that your body can process folic acid. So there is some conflicting information out there, but I tend to go with what Dr. Ben Lynch says. He's been studying this for his whole entire career.
Right.
He was really the person that was responsible for bringing the MTHFR issue to the public. Dr. Amy Yasko also has been a big proponent of this as well. But I know as from the moment I graduated as an FDN, over 4 or 5 years ago, Dr. Ben Lynch has been talking about this for a long time.
Interesting.
Okay, so stress depletes methyl groups and increases your body's demand for methylation. So the more your body's stressed out, the more it burns through the methyl groups faster. Also, toxins, like heavy metals in particular, like lead and mercury and aluminum, they can inhibit your methylation cycle. If we're talking about that analogy of a traffic circle, heavy metals can basically be a roadblock and stop the traffic circle. So can certain gut infections, like candida especially, can slow down methylation.
I did not know that. That's very interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Candida can it produces a toxin called acetaldehyde, which slow down your whole methylation cycle.
Very interesting.
So what is this here? If we look at this, all of this, exercise, stress reduction, detoxification, sounds pretty familiar, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what you're going to see here is what I put at the end of this list. Supplementing with methylated B vitamins should be the last thing. Okay.
Ryan Swansong, you guys.
Right. Oh. Okay, let's say you have an MTHFR genetic variant, and that gene is not working very well. So maybe your body isn't on its own producing as much methylated folate as your body needs, right? So your body's not producing as much very efficiently. That's fine. We can get plenty of folate in the diet, and we can totally bypass the MTHFR issue. It's kind of like biohacking it, right? Mm-hmm. We can get lots of folate from leafy greens, especially uncooked leafy greens. So like spinach and kale, for example, very high in methyl folate. And so these leafy greens contain approximately 80% of the folate in leafy greens is in the active methyl folate form, which means that if our MTHFR gene isn't working, we can plug that hole and kind of bypass that genetic issue and get a direct injection of methyl folate through leafy greens.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I made a little note here that boiling does leach some of the folate into water. And so that's one of the reasons why uncooked leafy greens will get you the most folate. Not to say, of course, you will get some from sauteing or boiling, but you're going to get most methyl folate from uncooked leafy greens. I had a roommate in my early 20s, and he used to say, "I don't eat anything green."
I've got 4 roommates right now that say the same thing.
Oh, your children? I wonder how he's doing now. It's been a while since I talked to him, but he would refuse to eat anything green. He ate a lot of fast food.
Oh,
and,
no.
And the thing is, MTHFR or no MTHFR issue, if you're not getting enough folate in the diet, you're going to be under-methylating. So yeah. All that stuff still matters, even if you don't have a genetic mutation.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you've got people in your house, like my people or yours, Ryan, hiding those leafy greens and smoothies is my favorite way to get it into my kids.
I love those practical tips. That's awesome. Very cool. Yeah, I love that. Mm-hmm. So also organ meats, very high in not just folate, but all kinds of different B vitamins, which are your methylation cycle is kind of a B vitamin hog, right? Your methylation cycle requires vitamin B2, B6, lots of B9, which is folate, vitamin B12, all of those. I want to show you guys something. This is from Chris Kresser's website. This compares 100 grams of apple versus carrots versus red meat versus beef liver. So same serving size. Hmm. look at this, look at folate here, which is the third from the bottom. There is 8 micrograms in apple, in 100 grams of apple, 24 in carrots, 4 in red meat, 145 micrograms in beef liver.
Fantastic.
Yep. So that is a lot, right? Mm-hmm. So our daily requirement for folate is roughly 400 micrograms. That's about a third.
This is so off topic, but I'm shocked to see that beef liver has more potassium than apples or carrots.
Way more. Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah. Look at, just as a quick little side note, look at vitamin A.
Yeah.
Apples, none, carrots, none, red meat, 40 IUs, beef liver, 53,000 IUs.
Incredible.
This is something I really try to emphasize with a lot of my clients, is that beef liver is like a nutrient bomb.
Mm-hmm.
Many other foods do not hold a candle to all kinds of organ meats when it comes to their nutrient density.
Also, a quick tangent, but I will say I use ancestral supplements, beef liver, with a lot of my clients who have amenorrhea, and it tends to restore menstrual normalcy really, really quickly.
Mm. And I'm sure that's in part because of the iron, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because if you look at iron is on here too. Look at iron has about 3 to 4 times more, liver has 3 to 4 times more iron than even red meat does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So in my opinion, and in nature's opinion, I would argue that organ meats are like a superfood for your methylation cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I would much prefer to get my nutrients from nature's packaging rather than a bunch of synthetic methylated B vitamins.
100%. So are you saying that you routinely eat liver as a food?
Yeah. Or if you can't stomach it, like you had mentioned, doing the capsules, you can get organ meat capsules from Ancestral Supplements or from Paleo Valley. Both are really good products that contain not just liver, but also heart and kidney. And the Ancestral Supplements has spleen and pancreas too. So mm-hmm. It has 5 different organ meats in there.
Yeah, it's a great product.
Super nutrient dense, right? So vitamin B2 is kind of the unsung hero of methylation support. The MTHFR gene, it can't work without vitamin B2. So everyone talks about folate and B12, but you also need vitamin B2 is critical. Again, you're going to get those in a great abundance in organ meats. Mm. Fermented foods are very high in B vitamins. So the process of fermentation increases the B vitamin content. So bacteria and yeast are like folate factories. And that's one of the reasons why Dr. Ben Lynch says that optimizing your flora is one of the first steps you should do to correct methylation issues. Because if you have the good kind of yeast and bacteria in your gut, they're going to help your microbiome to make some of these B vitamins. Here are some foods that are also naturally high in folate. Sprouted legumes, lentils, kale, asparagus, peppers, broccoli, avocados, blueberries, mangoes, oranges.
Delicious. So,
lots of ways. So I guess, the point here is if we're eating real food, we should be getting plenty of methylated B vitamins in our diet.
Mm-hmm.
And that is about it, guys. I guess the moral of the story here is that if you do have 1 or 2 copies of the MTHFR gene, just means that you have to be more mindful of stress reduction and exercise and helping your liver to detoxify, getting some of these nutrient dense foods in the diet. But really, you should probably be doing these things anyway for other reasons, right?
Sure.
So it's just kind of another way to emphasize the importance of the dress philosophy. And shows you how even when you go deep into some of these complex topics, they eventually lead you back towards simple foundational health building principles.
100%. That really is the beauty of dress. And our clients don't really care about this stuff. We do. And we love understanding it, the whys and wherefores, but they just want to feel better. So if your clients come to you with an MTHFR SNP, just applying the dress protocol, running the labs is going to get them, you know, feeling better pretty quickly, right?
And, you know, I have had exactly, and I have had a few clients that have come to me being already aware that they have an MTHFR genetic defect and they are on a methylated B complex. And I'll explain to them that, you know, obviously if they're coming to me, they're probably still highly symptomatic. And this is where I will spend some time explaining how, you know, methylated B vitamins may not work if your liver is congested and your gut is screwed up and you're stressed out and you're not getting some of these nutrients in your diet, right? So just kind of explaining to them that, you know, that they're kind of treating the symptom, right? If you're just taking the methyl B complex without being mindful of all these other dress concepts or principles, then the methyl B complex is very much just kind of like treating the symptom downstream rather than kind of fixing the issue upstream.
Right. And that's where your issue lies with just using methylated B vitamins is like a catch-all that you'd rather address each step before you have to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, they may not even work very well if your digestion is off and you're not breaking down those B vitamins, might just give you expensive pee.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. Well, you guys, thank you for sticking with us this long, Ryan. That was a ton of information. Great information. We have some comments on the group that says, thank you for breaking that down so well for our community. If you guys have more questions for Ryan, you can post them on this thread. And Ryan, I think we'll be diving a little bit further into some of these processes in our next Quick and Nerdy. I know we talked about perhaps phosphatidylcholine and its role in methylation or homocysteine. I wrote it down. And so we have more for you guys, and we'll see you, in about 2 weeks. Ryan, any closing thoughts on methylation today?
No, I think that's just about it. Sorry for being probably more long-winded than I anticipated, but, lot of good information here. And in a couple weeks, what I'd like to talk about is something called the choline shortcut.
Oh, fantastic. Love it.
Really cool little miniature topic, but really, really neat way to optimize your methylation.
I literally am very excited about that. And you know what? Moderate and nerdy doesn't quite have the same ring to it as quick and nerdy. So regardless, you know, if it takes us 20 or 45 minutes, we're all on this together. I know we all appreciate it. So thank you, Ryan, for your expertise and your time today.
My pleasure.
All right, you guys have a great Tuesday.
Have a good one. Bye.